Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Patrick Laine, a bit petulant behind a microphone. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, the bicycle kick of hockey analysts, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
It's good. It's good. I've been watching with great interest an unfolding story in which our protagonist, seemingly lost in the woods, finds great inspiration and a new injection of energy from an unlikely source, and then wreaks havoc on its surroundings. And no, Mike, I'm not talking about the new movie Cocaine Bear. I'm talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Well, Mike, congratulations to you. Once again, our narrative-setting podcast is delivering results. As soon as we recognize Josh Norrissey as a first-class player, we put him into first class. The NHL awards him second star of the week. Then Blake Wheeler takes our words to heart and takes his game up a couple of notches as soon as we put him in the penalty box. This proud Warriors knows that we didn't put him in the penalty box because we hate, but rather because we love. It was nice again to see our former captain score his last hat trick of his career.
I like how you pumped him up and then you also put the obituary on him. That was very subtle.
Well, I certainly hope it's not his last
hat-trick of his career. I'm pretty sure that is
going to be. Yeah, it might be. Yeah. I might be. I was on Cat Friendly today. He's got this year and one more on his contract, and we'll see.
Yeah, and then it's curtains. Okay, maybe. Well, we have a busy week, lots to get to. So we went 4-1 since our last podcast. So let's do check-in time. Okay, this, out of any other slate of games this year or even last year, I'm gonna cede the floor here, Vaughn. But statistically, I always think that the stats usually match the play. Mm-hmm. That's usually a consistent theme. But the Jets against the Blackhawks and the Avalanche,
combined
for 12-2, but yet the advanced stats are really kind of a meh, that like we could have lost or won either game if you're just looking at it on paper. And then the Blue Jackets, I thought we had a terrible game. The stats say otherwise. The Ducks, I thought we didn't play very well. Again, the stats say otherwise. And the Panthers are the same. So I have some theories, but I'll turn it over to you. This is the first time in a while where I'm a bit flummoxed by the underlying stats to what I thought was a good five-game stretch.
I agree. It was a good five-game stretch. I mean, just the record itself tells you that. What I'm starting to deduce from what I'm seeing with my eyes, which is always complemented by what we see in the stats, is I think the Jets, when they're playing well, do a good job of clogging up the middle of the ice. Okay? And in some games, they get up. So in both of those circumstances, their opponent wants to simplify. They want to get pucks to the net, right? So they're taking shots, not necessarily from the high danger area. Now, I would agree. In a number of games, we've given up more high danger chances than we've created. We're not exactly keeping our opponents to single digit opportunities from the high danger area. But I do think both of those things, like, how are we going to solve Hellebuck? Get pucks to the net, crash the net. We're down 3-0. How did that happen? We're not sure. How do we rectify that? Get pucks to the net. You know, simplify our game. So I think that can lead to some second chance opportunities from the high danger area. And I think it could, you know, sort of pump up our opponents, Corsi, Fenwick, shots on net, you know, expected goals, all of those types of things. And I'll get into this a little bit more when we talk about the power play. Hopefully we'll get to that. And a little bit more of what's happening recently when we weren't doing well in the power play, we weren't doing a good enough job of getting shots from the middle of the ice. We were really looking to set up Connor on the edge there, and that wasn't yielding results. So
yeah, no fair. But if you want to help your power play, you know who you play? Paul Maurice's team.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Their penalty kill is terrible. It was I get it. You can't really be very open or transparent on, let's say, Jets Twitter about, you know, I'm going to say it. My feelings for Paul Maurice are pretty well known. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a very good head coach. I think he's an excellent person and an excellent communicator. And this is where the dullards seem to confuse it. You could be a good person and a terrible coach. It's okay.
Look at me, Mike. Look at me. I'm one or the other. I haven't figured it out yet. I'm either a good person or a terrible coach, or a terrible person and a good coach. I'm not sure which one. I'm 51 years old. I hope to have it figured out in the next 10 years.
Well, we'll work on it. It's a two-year project. But this is the thing. I was watching the Panthers game, and I was like, man, we are really working the power play and just the maximum efficiency in terms of moving the puck around. And I was like, what are the Panthers doing on their PK? And I was like, Maurice.
Yeah, yeah.
Maurice is he's a bad coach. He doesn't inspire room. He doesn't have good X's and O's. He's a great soundbite, and he's been around in the league for a long time. That's it. So I would be remiss if I did not sort of
take a shot at him. Yeah.
At this, on like the Panthers were a Stanley Cup contender last year, and I know they've had injuries, and I know that a lot of their demise is they get a lot of shots, but they have like their shooting percentage is low. I understand all of that. It's still a Paul Maurice coach team that's underperforming. Mm-hmm. Paul Maurice is not a good head coach. Full stop,
you know,
done.
It does happen in sports where a coach is relevant for a certain period of time, and they don't evolve like the game evolves. And then the game is just in a different place than where they are as a coach and how they see the game. And then they're just out of place for a while. So the coaches that can do it over an exceptionally long period of time are truly great coaches. They can evolve and change with the game. And I think that's what we're seeing with Paul Maurice, is despite his eloquence and intelligence, that, you know, the way he sees the game, the way he envisions how to run a team, isn't where the game is at this moment. I think there's some really credible evidence to that degree. And I will point directly at my favorite player, number 55, Mark Scheifele, in his evasiveness or in his select words, really gave off a flavor that, you know, good riddance to bad rubbish kind of thing. He is flourishing. I honestly think every single night, now I'm biased, we both know that. Every single night I watch the Jets, he's the best player on the ice. At the worst, and to be honest, I don't even really remember McKinnon that much from the Colorado game. You know what I mean?
He had some chances.
I wish I knew how to quit you. Right. I'm not saying he's better than McKinnon. I'm saying in the small group of games that this year represents, you'd be hard-pressed to see a player on any given night outperform Scheifele. Of course, there's been bad nights. I'm thinking of the Calgary game we talked about on the last podcast. Where Scheifele wasn't at his best. But, you know, he was pretty good over this stretch. I think we did a lot of things we needed to do. And then I think more importantly, we saw who we shouldn't be. And then we were able to work our way out of that quite literally. You know, we saw against Columbus, we were that team that was trying to look for and generate offense first, okay? And, you know, we worked our way out of that in the Anaheim game. We started that game poorly.
Yeah.
And we just made that decision, the old-fashioned decision, the best tactical adjustment in the book. Work harder. You know, you just have to want it more. Just give it an A. And I think we started to move our feet much better in the back half of the Anaheim game, and we started to put pucks in the net. I mean, that Columbus game, the Jets were about as aggressive as Vaughn Mitchell at a high school dance, which means they didn't really work hard enough or to get close to anybody.
Vaughn, we didn't go to high school together, obviously. but you're Your references to your high school prowess makes me think that we would have been best friends in high school, because your dating scene sounds a lot like mine.
Oh, yeah. It was non-existence. So you mentioned Patrick Laine before, and I couldn't help but, you know, just bring up that I'm enjoying his continual evolution into becoming Voldemort.
He really is.
Does that make Mark Shifley our Harry Potter?
Oh, well played. So, yes. Honestly, yes.
He's literally turning into a villain.
He's got the shaved head. He just needs a shaved cat. Like, it really is. And I watched that game intently, and all of the Patrick Laine experience was out there. Like, the brilliance, even the defensive brilliance, but just the true dynamo that he is as a hockey player. But he is a spoiled, and I apologize for the word, he's a spoiled bitch. Like, he shrugs his shoulders. He gives up on plays. If things aren't going his way, it's all about Patrick Laine all the time. And it made me think, despite all his brilliance, and I miss him dearly, but he is not a sustainable and a winning player right now. I thought after years that he might have matured or grown up. His soundbite suggests otherwise. His play suggests otherwise. He's still a kid, and it's still all about Laine. And as much as I love him, and as much as I would relish having him on our team just for scoring opportunities, I think we did the right thing. He's just all about Laine.
Well, certainly if we can sign PLD to either a long-term or even a medium-term contract, I think it'll be fair. I think an interesting perspective that I heard recently about the trade of Laine and Roslovic for PLD is that, you know, as with everything, you know, you don't just, you know, we acquired cap space as well. And if you take a look at what Roslovic makes and what Laine makes, that, like, even the theory goes, even if we had to sign PLD at $9 million a year, that's less than what Roslovic and Laine are currently making. So we actually gained, well, obviously we have one less player in the deal, but along with that single player came the cap room to potentially sign him long term. So I thought that was interesting. Something I'm interested in getting your take on that we really haven't touched upon was the amazing 5-0 victory against Colorado at home and what your thoughts on it were. I'll let you go first. I have a couple thoughts, nothing too deep, but I think we really should touch upon that game because it was such a really good victory in a lot of ways, like aesthetically, superficially beating the Stanley Cup champs 5-0, even at home is a really good accomplishment, especially when they're a division rival. What did you see when you watched that game?
Yeah. So I thought we played a good game. I thought we were about even, but I'm not going to take too much away from it, only because, again, I think we were, you know, I think it was 10-16 in the high danger chances. I thought the expected goals were, they didn't favor us. We either got a hat trick, and kudos to him, but we had a 21% shooting percentage.
Ooh.
And I think that speaks to some of our success over November and then creeping into December. Is that we've been shooting incredibly.
Shooting the lights out, yeah.
And we've been shooting the lights out. Like, our expected goals were under 50% again. Mm-hmm. But it really is, like, in November, we were the best shooting team. And we also have one of the best goaltenders. And as much as it pains me to bring this up again, but we're, again, very close to teetering on one of those Axdiff teams. Mm-hmm. And Axdiff is basically, like, the goal differential above expected. So it means either you're really, really good or you have really good talent for scorers and you have a really good goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid in this instance, in some of these wins, that's what we're falling. Like in 2020, 21, we were second. In 2019, we were second. And then 2021, we were 16th because our goaltending wasn't very good and we were just not good in general. But now, again, we're sixth. And we're not, like, I know our rankings sort of places there, but I'm getting a bit worried that our sort of possession metrics and our other underlying metrics are such that we are getting bailed out by really good shooting percentage, because we were 16.5 in the Blackhawks game, 21 against the Avalanche, 16.7 in the Panthers game, and the average shooting percentage is about 10%. So we're over our skis. So again, a good win, but maybe again, not indicative of sort of the true effort there.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Just quickly looking at the Jets PDO, which is similar to Axdiff, we're second in the league right now, second in save percentage and tenth in shooting percentage. So really being driven, at least the PDO, really being driven by save percentage, as you allude to, and we're doing pretty damn well in shooting percentage, top 10 in the league. So I agree. I think it is your favorite, the Money Puck, deserved a win-a-meter. Had the Jets at 43.1. Yeah. So, like you said, about even. We weren't dominated, but I felt that we were able to finish, and there were some of their times, some of their plays where they were able to do what they wanted to do, but they just lacked that clinical finish right at the end, or the puck jumped over their stick, or it, you know, this side of the post versus that side of the post, you know, is the difference between a goal and not even a shot on net, right? So there was a few inches that we found that they weren't able to find. So again, I think the 5-0 score was a bit deceiving. And a little bit of trivia. You alluded to Blake Wheeler scoring a hat trick. He becomes the second oldest player in Jets Thrashers history to score a hat trick. The oldest being, of course, you know this. Go ahead.
Oh.
Caught you off guard. I'm just joking. Ray Coach Ferraro.
Ray Ferraro. Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Ray Ferraro. So, you know, we go from the Colorado game, and then we lose 4-1 to Columbus on an IPA eye test Friday night. I mean, my goodness, what are we even doing here? Like, the emotional swing over between Tuesday and Sunday was amazing. Tuesday, we beat Colorado at home. We were able to soak that in for a few days, really build ourselves up into believing we're something that maybe we're not. We crash and burn on a Friday night. And then on Sunday afternoon, we leave ourselves for dead in the first period. We're down 2-0, being outshot 15-3. And then the Jets started to move their feet. They just started to work harder. It was incredible. That was the return of create offense through hard work and strong defensive zone coverage. So I think in this week overall, as I said, we really learned who we can't be. That was on prominent display. We learned how we get out of that problem by moving our feet, clogging the middle of the ice, creating offense through defense as opposed to looking for offense first. And then that led to I thought our game against Florida was good. All in all, 4-1 to the week. I gotta throw PLD some props for the shade he threw the guy in the penalty box. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah.
That was really awesome. Good. I have a lot of time for that. So
I do all day for that.
I don't know. Do we want to go to the MacWack Continuum?
Let's do it. Yep. MacWack Continuum. MacWack Continuum. All right. What are you giving it? 4-1. Go optimistic, Vaughn.
I am giving it an 8.0. Oh. A Mac Daddy status week. All right. Daddy, so Mac for Daddy. Our listeners, Mac Daddy can be defined as a pimp, especially a prosperous one, a flirtatious and seductive man. I think that aptly describes the Jets games this week. Most amazing while still being a little bad at the same time.
Did you Google pimp on your work computer?
Absolutely. How white does someone have to be to actually Google the definition of Mac Daddy?
I'm going to go 7.5. I'm right there with you. Again, my trepidation aside, I think that we really need to firm up some of the possession stats, but a win's a win. I can't make heads or tails of the advanced stats this week, so I'm just going vibes, baby. 7.5.
So a couple things I liked from this week that I want to share with you. The Jets have scored 5 or more goals in 5 of the past 6 games. Absolutely. Hey, I like goals. Yep. That's good. Okay, the Jets have also won 5 of the past 6 games in which they've scored 15 goals from the high danger area. Not just 15 goals, 15 high danger chance goals in the past 6 games. That's good. Okay, so you're right. The macro stats aren't that great. Some of the micro stats are improving, and we'll get to the power play in a second. A little foreshadowing there for our listeners.
Nice.
But I do think there are elements of the game I like and elements from this week that we can take and build going forward.
I agree. All right, pre-boarding announcements.
Good afternoon, passengers. This is the pre-boarding announcement for Flight 89B to Rome.
Okay, our first class assignment brought to you, as always, by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. Who am I putting in first class? The power play.
What?
The power play, Mike. I'm putting the power play in first class. Okay, because
really?
they've had a great week. Okay, so now at the beginning of the week, they were a candidate for the penalty box. But in the last six games, where is it here? Where did I put those stats? I had it all written out. In the last five games, Mike, the power play has gone 7-15, okay, which has substantially changed their overall power play ranking. At the beginning of prep for this podcast, the power play was a strong candidate to be put in the penalty box, being at the bottom of the league in several of the most important power play categories, such as creating high danger chances. They've done a much better job of creating high danger chances lately, whereas before they were too reliant on looking to set up KFC on the low wall. These shots are, of course, lower percentage and outside the high danger area. I don't think this should be our primary look on the power play, but rather a compliment when the middle of ice has been taken away. They've done a better job of getting that puck in the middle of the ice. Off the top of my head, a couple massive opportunities for Mark Scheifele that didn't end up going in the back of the net, but they did a much better job. Like I said, when I started to build these stats earlier in the week, it was an argument to put the power play in the penalty box. But overall, it hasn't been good. But like I said, in the past five games, 7-15. That's something to build on.
All right. Well, unconventional, but I like it. I'm going to go a little more conventional and a little more homerism. I'm going to go Cole Perfetti.
Okay.
Now, I should sort of honorable mention Sacco Malinainen and Morgan Barron. Like our third and fourth lines have really, really carried us for a certain extent over these past five games. But I'm in love with Cole Perfetti's vision and his passing. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention it and honor him to a certain extent. And you'll see in the next segment, I'm also tempering my excitement. But I Cole Perfetti, come on up. You're gonna get you get to have Vaughn's steak because he gave it to an entire unit.
Oh, that's right. So yes, we have to bring in some special food. Like he gets the same amount of food as the entire power play.
Right.
So
there you go.
He'll have some pounds to work off after this episode comes out. No, I like the selection. I am also quite bullish on Cole Perfetti. There are things he still needs to learn. He still gets knocked off the puck too easily. He's not great, you know, getting checking our opponents. But those all things will his game will round out as he gets more experience. He's there out there right now to compliment Mark Scheifele and to create chances and be a smart player.
Yeah,
and you're really seeing that come to fruition. So I like the choice. So now let's go. Who are we going to put in the penalty box? The penalty box, as always, brought to you by Dongs, Fongs, and Bongs. Come visit us at 1316 Main Street for a friendly, judgment-free shopping experience. All right, do you want to go first? Who do you got in the penalty box?
You know what? In a bit of twisted irony, I have Cole Perfetti. And he kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but exactly what you just said is what I believe, is that I think he is majestic. But he's kind of got that Mark Scheifele when he first, like, the Bambi on skates. He gets knocked over too easily. He gets taken on pucks too easily. He's got a lot of work to do on his game. And I think, and it kills me to say it, but out of the Scheifele-Wheeler-Perfetti combo, he does sometimes sort of stick out as the weak point. Mm-hmm. And so he's got to improve. And so he's both first class and penalty box this week.
But that's what you're going to get from the young guys, right? You're going to get that variation in play. And I think he's proven he has enough NHL skill that we just got to just coach him. We talked about that all the time. He's a great talent. Coach him.
Agreed. Who you got?
All right. I'm putting Dylan Sandberg in the penalty box.
Oh, I thought that might happen.
Still too many mistakes for me. Yeah. We might have to rename this award the Get Off My Team Award after my son, AJ, blurted this out after watching Sandberg lose the puck at the blue line in the Anaheim game. He just yelled, Dylan Sandberg, get off my team! He's 10, by the way. I don't know if 10-year-olds should be that angry, but...
No, we're building it early. Good for him.
All right. Quickly, I got some cool stat updates. I know you love these, Mike.
All right.
Okay, Jets when scoring two or less goals, 0 wins, 8 losses. Jets when scoring 3 or more goals, 16 wins, 0 losses. Jets when scoring 4 or more goals, 12 wins, 0 losses. All right, update. Now, I know you care about this one. Yeah. The Jets with Logan Stanley, still 2 wins, 3 losses, 4 of a possible 10 points. Jets without Logan Stanley, 14 wins, 4 losses, 1 overtime loss, 29 of a possible 38 points.
Again, fantastic. And if I might add, I've done a bit of a doppelganger redux, and go Google the lead singer of Mariana's Trench.
Okay.
And then Google Logan Stanley. They're identical.
I get the feeling
better than the
Ethan Hawke one.
Yeah. The Ethan Hawke Philby one.
Yeah.
Fjällby. They're spitting images. Just Jonsson Google Fjällby. It, folks.
All right. I love how much time you've dedicated to that, and it's
ridiculous.
Makes me worry for your job, actually.
Yeah.
All right. In-flight entertainment, we're going to go. I think we have 7 questions this week, so if it feels like we've been moving quickly, it's because we want to get to these questions. I've got 5. You've got 2. Let's get started. All right, my first question for you, Mike. Did Mark Scheifele throw too much shade in the direction of Paul Maurice?
No. We all knew, obviously, from Mark Scheifele's end of the season press conference was a topic of much discussion in Jets fandom world, and he wasn't happy. And I wish Paul Maurice the best. And he sounds like a lovely individual and a perfect gentleman. But I said it earlier, I just don't think he's a good head coach. So if the best player on our team wants to throw shade, my man. Have at her.
And score 50 goals. Now, right. Listen, we had asked for volunteers to drive Mark Scheifele out of town after that year-ending press conference last year, there would have been a long line encircling Canada Life Center. So we don't exactly know what went on behind the scenes, but I think that it was a strategically smart move. Like, he wasn't particularly rude or anything like that, nor did he betray confidences. But he very clearly said, I've moved on. And, he didn't quite blame Paul Maurice, but he kind of didn't either, or he kind of did in a way, too. But he's basically selling to the fan base, I'm all in now, I'm behind Rick Bonus, LFG, let's fucking go.
Agreed. All right, yeah.
Question 2. What is the better nickname for Neil Pionk, Captain Chaos, or the Pionky Tonk Man?
Did you just come up with that?
No, I can't claim that one. I saw that one on Twitter today. And I didn't write it down who it was from.
I love Captain Chaos, but I got to go.
Pionky Tonk Man is phenomenal.
So yeah, so, I got to go with that.
That is the correct answer. So
yeah,
I'm sure the person who came up with that is listening. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Kudos to you.
All right. So question 3, who is the most underrated Jet and why is it Adam Lowry?
So it's Adam Lowry. Correct. And again, my love for him is sort of well-known and well-documented.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine sort of our third line and fourth line prowess, especially this year. There's just a something about consistency, like the face-offs. He's a winner. Puck battles, he's a winner. Defensive presence, he's a winner. He's just a winner. And again, I think we lost sight of that because his dad was our head coach, which is the craziest thing ever. But he really is sort of the heart and soul of this team.
You know, I knew this was low-hanging fruit for you, and that's why I teed it up. But I've been particularly impressed with him this year. He's contributing in all of the ways that you mentioned. He brings even a bit of an offensive threat on the penalty kill. He's finally found some line mates that really complement him, I think, or they've found line mates to complement him better than in previous years. I've been impressed with his play this year. I think we're really coming with four lines. Each line is different and brings a little something different to the table, for sure. Adam Lowry's not bringing the same thing that Mark Scheifele does, obviously, but I think he staked out. He's one of those guys that has grown into that A really quickly. He's part of the group that was sort of bubbling below the surface that wanted to take that step forward and be more heard and take more ownership and take a greater role in the success of the Winnipeg Jets. And I think that's very clear and evident with his play on the ice. So, we're in agreement there.
Totally agree.
Question four. How many five-minute major penalties were not called against the Panthers in their December 6th game against the Jets?
The reffing sucks. The NHL needs to get on it, or again, I'd point to Gary Bettman, and that's sort of wish casting on its own regard. But I follow NHL hockey obviously very, very closely. You know, I do follow the NFL to a certain degree, and I understand reffing is hard, but we're just really bad at it, like really bad at it. Oh, my dog has something to say about that too. And so we just can't be this bad at something and then kind of throw it under the rug and pretend that nothing's happening. So I'm just going to, like, a million? Was that the right answer?
The correct answer is two. The spear from Tkachuk and then the hit from behind against Wheeler. I thought those were two clear 5-minute I think that even if the Jets had perpetrated those things onto another team, and me being a Winnipeg Jet fan, I would be hard to argue that that would be the wrong call. And for two of those things to happen in the same game, it's a little bit mind-boggling, and now we've had this continuum of very strange calls against the Winnipeg Jets. Listen, I don't think there's some grand conspiracy against the Jets. We kind of alluded to that in a fun way in the last podcast. But perhaps, as you quite rightly indicate, this speaks to a broader problem in just the volatility of the calls from game to game. And I don't know how you look at either of those things, especially the hit from behind against Wheeler, whether it was intentional or not. And there may have been zero malice in that guy's heart to hit Wheeler from behind in the boards, but it was a clear, terrible hit against one of the better players in this league over the past decade. That isn't some schmo that just got called up from the AHL. That's Blake Wheeler, a former longtime captain, probably one of the top wingers in the NHL over the past decade, not a nobody by any stretch of the imagination, and to not call either of those, okay, I think is just a little bit embarrassing for the NFL NHL officiating community. All right, so.
I agree.
Question five. This is my last question, then it's over to you.
Okay.
After 11 seasons, our season ticket group decided not to renew this year.
Oh.
Four of us are going to the game on the 15th. Okay. I'm, in fact, missing my son's band concert to attend.
Yeah, you sure are.
How excited are you, Mike? How excited are you for the game on the 15th?
Now, we'll re-bring in the Mac to WAC continuum. Ooh. I'm on 11.
Nice.
In terms of the excitement. I can't describe how much I miss the fresh crew and going to games with you guys. And so with bated breath and anticipation, this is going to be fun. So out of 11.
I am the same. The only thing is, my only kind of cause for concern in going to the game is I was responsible for buying the tickets. And we tried the third tier, the upper decks this time, where we've never sat before. I've literally never been up there. So I'm hoping we're able to see the game from our seats. So I trust that we will. I've never heard anyone speak badly about being in the upper decks, but we'll see.
It's all good. We'll be good.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to combine. I had two, but I'm going to combine mine into one and make it sort of a bastardized question. But I think both Josh Morrissey and Connor Hellebuck have a chance to win NHL awards for the best defenseman and goalie, respectively, at the position. The last time that happened on the same team was 2008-2009 with Chara and Tim Thomas. Mm-hmm. What do you think the odds are that that's going to happen this year?
Well, I think they're extremely low because I think there'll be a lot of challengers, a lot of candidates for the Norris Trophy. I think it's wonderful, the level of play in which Josh Morrissey has attained this year. I love how the fans are embracing it because we kind of fell out of love with him, and we've touched upon that. So I love that that's happening. But in all reality, not necessarily that the selection committee pays a ton of attention to statistics, but the statistics suggest that his play is been more aesthetically pleasing than anything else. He's producing points, which is great, but you know, he still gets stuck out there at times for long periods defending. I don't think he's a shutdown defender yet. I don't think that he and DeMello have played to their capabilities yet. So we'll see how long they remain a pair. I think Hellebuck, slam dunk is too hard, but I think he'll be right there. I think there's been several things that have been published recently that quantify his excellence over the last 5 years and saying he's been the best goalie in the NHL for over the past 5 years. I think he's going to be right there. I think he's got a phenomenal chance at winning the Vezina again this year if the Jets can continue along the path that they're currently on. Can Josh Morrissey?
See, it's even
slipping in there. Subliminally slipping in there. Can he do it? Yes. The probability, I think, is low that they both do it. Yeah. But that doesn't mean we can't enjoy the renaissance of Josh Morrissey.
Oh, did you just put emphasis on the different syllable? That was really good.
I try that sometimes.
Yeah. I would think that, and I would strongly suggest that Hellebuck's chances are pretty strong. The Islanders goalie, Sorokin, is really putting in a good season. But outside of him, I think Hellebuck is a clear choice. And Morrissey is one where it just, like you say, appreciate the ascendance, appreciate the redemption tour. But I don't, even if he wins scoring, which he's not, because Carlson, I think, is going to take that. I don't think it's in the cards. If he can repeat that performance next year, then I think there's a shot.
Yeah. I think what we really need from Josh is not for him to I think he
be a little DeMello more defensively sound.
Exactly. All of this other stuff that's happening is great. We need them to be really a shutdown pair that can play both with the fourth line, just as well with the fourth line as with the first line. So we'll see how that evolves. I'm excited. It was a good week of Jets hockey, although, you know, in terms of outcomes, it was like, again, we're talking about a roller coaster. You know, we're up and we're down.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it. I'm enjoying the games. I think December will be, for myself, special. We're going to the game as a group. I'm taking my kids to a game. Took advantage of the, I don't know if you've seen the promo, the $49. Yeah, $49 Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the kids on the 20th. You know, that's smart because it's a ticket and a beer. And if by taking two kids that can't drink, it's like ticketed three beers. So
I'm not going to say anything, Vaughn.
No, my wife's going to pick us up. My wife's going to drop us off and pick us up. So I've got that covered. I'm playing chess over here, Mike. All right. Playing chess.
As you always are. All right. Yeah. On that, do you want to take us out?
Absolutely. Okay, so fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcast. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.